This week on Vaticano, meet the new Russian ambassador to the Holy See and witness the efforts Pope Francis is making to promote peace on the world stage. A humanitarian emergency is currently unfolding in Armenia, and many fear a genocide could occur once again in this ancient country that first adopted Christianity. Hear from the Patriarch of Armenia what's happening on the ground, and travel to Mongolia to witness how Catholics are living in the least densely populated nation on earth. Vaticano starts now. Pope Francis, on September the 18th, met with the newly appointed Russian ambassador to the Holy See, Ivan Soltanovsky. The meeting, during which Soltanovsky presented his credential letters to the pontiff, comes days after papal envoy Cardinal Matteo Zuppi visited Beijing to discuss efforts to bring about peace in Ukraine amid the ongoing Russo-Ukrainian war. The 68-year-old is a career diplomat who was appointed by President Vladimir Putin. His predecessor was one of the first ambassadors to be famously visited by Pope Francis. When Russia invaded Ukraine in February of 2022, the Holy Father went to the Russian embassy and pleaded for peace. The atmosphere of the meeting was friendly, and the two men discussed, in particular, the mission of the papal special envoy to Ukraine, Cardinal Matteo Zuppi, aimed at solving a number of humanitarian issues, Soltanovsky told Russia's official TASS news agency. We agreed to continue an honest and open dialogue with the Holy See, traditionally based on mutual respect, Soltanovsky told TASS. While serving as Pope Francis's peace envoy, Zuppi has made several diplomatic visits across the world to promote peace between Russia and Ukraine, including stops in Kyiv, Moscow, and Washington, D.C. Pope Francis has condemned the war and called for peace in Ukraine on numerous occasions, but has also occasionally received criticism from Ukrainians for the way he has expressed himself. Russia and the Holy See restored full diplomatic relations in 2010, after maintaining limited diplomatic relations since 1990. At the Centro Aleti, there is, quote, a healthy community life without any particular critical issues. These are the conclusions reached by the canonical visit to the Centro Aleti, ordered by the Vicar Cardinal of Rome, Angelo De Donatis, at the beginning of the year. The Vicariate of the Diocese of Rome, the chancery which handles the day-to-day governance of the Pope's diocese, issued a statement September the 18th, describing the conclusions of a visitation to the Centro Aleti, a center of art, theology, and culture, at which Father Marko Rupnik lived and served as director. Rupnik, a famed Slovenian artist, was charged with sexual, spiritual, and psychological abuse. Last June, Rupnik, who remains a priest, was dismissed from the Society of Jesus, in accordance with canon law, due to his persistent refusal to observe the vow of obedience. The new laudatory statement from the Diocese of Rome came after a September the 15th audience with Pope Francis and Maria Campatelli, an Italian lay theologian who currently directs the Centro Aleti and who has defended Rupnik against the abuse charges. Additionally, there are, quote, legitimate doubts concerning the excommunication imposed in May of 2020 on the then director of the Centro, Marko Rupnik, for the, quote, seriously abnormal procedures followed in formulating the request for this ecclesiastical penalty. The Centro Aleti, initiated in the early 1990s and later developed and grown under the authority of the Society of Jesus, became a public association of the faithful of the Diocese of Rome in June of 2019. The investigation was entrusted to Father Giacomo Inciti, an expert in canon law at the Pontifical Urban University, who presented the final report on June the 23rd. Based on this report, Cardinal De Donatis decreed the conclusion of the canonical visit. Reaction to the statement in the Italian media has been broad and at times critical. Music.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from Pope Francis and the Vatican. Pope Francis invited Catholics in Korea to emulate the zeal of their patron saint, St. Andrew Kim Taegon. The Holy Father met with a delegation of 300 members of the Catholic Church in Korea several hours before a permanent installation of a statue of Kim was unveiled in a niche on the exterior of St. Peter's Basilica. Born in 1821, Kim was the first native Korean priest and one of the country's earliest martyrs. Cardinal Matteo Zuppi traveled to Beijing to continue the Vatican's diplomatic efforts to bring peace in Ukraine. Vatican spokesman Matteo Bruni said that Pope Francis continues to support humanitarian initiatives and work towards a just peace. He has described Zuppi's scheduled stop in Beijing as part of the Vatican's peace offensive, which has already included visits to Kiev, Moscow, and Washington, D.C. Catastrophic flooding in Libya resulted in up to 10,000 deaths following multiple dam failures and torrential downpours. The Vatican, meanwhile, said in a telegram that Pope Francis was deeply saddened by the national tragedy, offering prayers to the country as it works to address the disaster and rescue those still affected by it. The Holy Father addressed the Clinton Global Initiative through a live video call and invited people of goodwill to seek the common good. Pope Francis also thanked former U.S. President Bill Clinton for acknowledging pressing issues like climate change, humanitarian crises, and the threat of war. On his website, the Clinton Foundation touts its global initiative as creating a community of doers who are taking action on the world's most pressing challenges together. Pope Francis met with Queen Mathilde and her husband, King Philippe, in the Vatican. The Belgian royals and the Holy Father discussed the war in Ukraine and a shared commitment to peace during the 20-minute meeting, according to a statement released by the Vatican. It was the monarch's second visit to the Vatican this year, as King Philippe and Queen Mathilde also traveled to Rome for the funeral of Pope Benedict XVI in January. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. I'm Matthew Santucci for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll be back with more on Vaticano.
Reality of the human being in front of his brother or sister or parents or children. Can we imagine it? And I am afraid that whatever we're saying today, we said it in the past. All the people, all the nations, all the ambassadors, all the countries, they were present at the genocide moments. They wrote, they pictured, they did everything possible to stop, but nobody moved anything to stop it.
Armenia, known as the first Christian country, adopted the faith in the year 301 and has remained Christian ever since.
The whole Armenians.
The Armenian Catholic Patriarch, Raphael Bedros XXI Manassian, is the head of the Catholic minority. There's a good relationship between the Christians and other religions in the country, a bond forged through suffering. Over the centuries, the Armenian people have faced many hardships. At the start of the 20th century, the Turkish state massacred hundreds of thousands of Armenians. Up to 1.5 million people died in the years 1915 to 1916. As the Ottoman Empire was disintegrating after the end of World War I. Many of the victims were civilians deported to barren desert regions, where they were marched to death or left to die of starvation and thirst.
Quella tragedia, quel genocidio.
Sadly, that tragedy, that genocide, was the first of the deplorable series of catastrophes of the past century made possible by twisted racial, ideological, or religious aims that darken the minds of the tormentors, even to the point of planning the annihilation of entire peoples.
Di prefiggere l'intento di annientare interi popoli.
Not all have accepted the reality of this brutal genocide that primarily targeted Christians. Pope Francis's statement on his papal trip to Armenia meant that the Vatican's envoy to Turkey was recalled. Today, international observers are warning again of genocide. Since the 12th of December 2022, Azerbaijan has blocked the Lakhin Corridor, a mountain road which links the isolated mountain region of Nagorno-Karabakh to Armenia. The conflict between the majority Christian Armenia and the majority Muslim Azerbaijan dates back to the early 20th century, with the present conflict rooted in the late 1980s. Fighting is focused on the disputed Nagorno-Karabakh territory, which, though located within Azerbaijan, is populated by ethnic Armenians. Around 120,000 Armenians live in the enclave. The road closure has isolated them from the world. They have no food, medicine, or basic necessities. Families are separated.
Azerbaijan's 8-month-long blockade of the Lachin Corridor, the road of life connecting Nagorno-Karabakh with Armenia, continues. Today, 120,000 people living in Nagorno-Karabakh are deprived of exercising their fundamental human rights due to the absence of fuel and the targeting of villagers by Azerbaijan. Agricultural lands remain uncultivated. So 30,000 children are struggling from malnutrition.
The Holy See is actively involved in resolving this situation before more atrocities happen. Pope Francis said he was concerned about the situation created in the Lakhin Corridor. For that reason, the Secretary of State, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, visited Armenia and Azerbaijan in July of 2023. In late 2020, the second Nagorno-Karabakh war erupted, resulting in thousands of casualties. Eventually, a loose ceasefire was established, but the terror and violence for the civilians continued. Aid to the Church in Need is one of the church institutions which continue to help and push for humanitarian aid in the war-torn region.
Nowadays, the situation in Armenia is very difficult because of the war, prolonged war, more than 30 years with Azerbaijan. The corridor that is linking the Nagorno-Karabakh region inhabited by Armenian Christian population and the rest of the country has been cut off by Azeri troops. And now the population needs basic elements to survive.
Cardinal Parolin's visit to Armenia and Azerbaijan is a further advancement of the Holy See's push to promote peace among the warring nations. And it's high time for the international community to act. Patriarch Raphael Manassian found strong words, saying that the Armenian people do not need our sympathy. They need peace.
It's like something very dangerous that reminds us the past. And the past is not past already, because 100 years passed, and I am the first generation after the genocide, which is its suffering. And imagine that we're repeating the same history to the new generation, to our actual, the 21st, 22nd century. We're going for a genocide. After all the crimes that happened in the world, my question is, what the human being waiting to have.
Heroism, faith, unity. These three characteristics were exemplified by the Ulma family. In this interview with Archbishop Adam Schall, the Archbishop of the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Przemyśl, Poland, we delve into the remarkable story of the Ulma family's beatification, their courageous actions during World War II, and the profound impact their beatification has had on Poland, its youth, and the broader relationship between faith and society.
Your Excellency, good morning and welcome to Rome. I wanted to know if you could speak for a moment about the relics of the Ulma family, and have you seen, experienced a large interest in their cause?
We are all grateful to divine providence for having reached this special moment in which the beatification of the family of Joseph and Victoria, together with their children, is taking place for us, the residents of Poland and the inhabitants of Podkarpacie. Now, it is a special gift from divine providence in these very challenging times for the Catholic Church and for the family. First and foremost, it is about the whole family standing before the entire world with a certain message, a certain mission. Now, this mission is about persevering in marriage, about the transmission of life, and the protection of life. But it is also a great message about living according to faith, living according to the commandment of love, and living sacramental lives. I am convinced that the beatification has infused us all with a lot of energy and strength to spread the truth about the Lord God, and also about the people who lived according to the commandment of love for God and neighbor.
And what does this beatification mean for the life of the Church, not only in their hometown, but also in the entire country of Poland?
Beatification is a reminder of the great work that can be called a heroic work, in which people sacrifice their lives and health to save others. Now, only in Poland, there was a heartless law that punished anyone who helped those in need, especially of Jewish nationality. And it was the Ulma family who, in the spirit of responsibility, not only for themselves, but also for their fellow human beings, rushed to help us, the residents of Poland and the inhabitants of Podkarpacie. Now, this is an opportunity to recall the great multitude of people who helped those in need during World War II. Now, it is estimated that over 1,000 to 1,230 people lost their lives while assisting individuals of Jewish nationality in any way.
And for our last question for you, in 1995, the State of Israel gave the Ulmas the title of Righteous Among Nations, an honorific title used by Israel to describe non-Jews who risked their lives during the Holocaust to save Jews. What effect will this beatification have on ecumenical relations with the Jewish people?
As we prepare for the beatification, we also want to invite representatives of the Israeli nation to this ceremony. Chief Rabbi of Poland, Mr. Michael Shudrick, has been invited, as have representatives of institutions that promote Jewish culture. Descendants of those who were sheltered in Markova will also be invited. I think an event like this, combined with prayers at the cemetery where those murdered by the Germans are buried, and the memory of the Jews sheltered by Joseph and Victoria Ulma, is an opportunity to bring our nations closer together, especially since Podkarpacie, particularly towns like Lejeune and Dino, are places visited by tourists from Israel and by groups of devout Jews. I'm also pleased to see the beautiful tradition that organized groups of young people come to Markova to pay their respects to Joseph and Victoria Ulma by visiting their cemetery and places associated with sheltering Jews. Therefore, I hope that the beatification, which highlights the heroism of the Ulma family, will bring our nations closer together. After all, Joseph and Victoria Ulma are examples of unity among people and unity between nations.
We'll be back after a short break with more on Vaticano.
These are the gods my husband's parents used to worship. And now, since we're married, we worship them. I come here and I pray for my children. This is a herder's god, because when we move from one place to another, this god is hung from the camel.
Mongolia, once a colossal empire, boasts an ancient and remarkable heritage. Today, this expansive land is inhabited by a mere 3.4 million people, rendering it one of the world's most sparsely populated nations. For millennia, the people of Mongolia have embraced a nomadic lifestyle, constantly on the move while living and working off the land.
It seems to me that the people in the city have nothing to do. I imagine it must be boring. For us herders, we grew up with this, and we're happy as long as we're with the animals. We both come from herder families, and being a herder means there's always a lot of work to do.
Have you ever heard of the Catholic Church or Pope Francis?
No, I haven't been to any of the foreign churches. Sometimes when I go to the city, I go to the Buddhist cathedral.
Buddhism stands as the predominant faith in Mongolia, with approximately 52% of the population adhering to it. Shamanism, a belief system centered on communing with spirits and facilitating healing, also holds a significant place in the country's identity and culture. In stark contrast, Catholics constitute a minuscule fraction of the populace, making up less than 1%. Over the past three decades, the Catholic Church has been gradually growing in Mongolia, although not without its challenges. Ulaanbaatar, the capital city, is home to half of Mongolia's population, approximately 1.3 million individuals. It's in this bustling city that we find the Augustin family, comprised of Yaslav and Sierdnerov, both university professors, along with their son and daughter. Despite being a minority within the country, they warmly extend Mongolian hospitality to us as devoted Catholics.
It's traditional?
Traditional food.
I wanted to get closer to God. And the Catholic Church has its own theology and rich history. So it wasn't a random choice that I got baptized as a Roman Catholic.
Was it difficult for you to become a Catholic and embrace the faith when it's not in your culture or your traditions?
A person seeks truth. And what is the truth? My husband, my husband's friends, the priests in the church, they all explain the meaning of truth. So that's why it's easy for us to believe.
When you decided to become Catholics, what was the reaction from your friends and family?
Well, they generally don't say it to our faces, but sometimes we do feel cast out. They say things like, you know, he believes in Jesus. He got brainwashed. They say these things. But it's the belief in Jesus that matters. That's what's important.
The majority of Mongolians view the Catholic Church with suspicion, perceiving it as a foreign religion. The country's sole cathedral, St. Peter and Paul's Church, stands as a solitary testament to the Catholic presence. And Father Sanjivav is one of only two Mongolian-born priests in Mongolia, alongside a group of 40 foreign missionaries.
How would you describe the Catholic Church in Mongolia?
The modern Catholic Church in Mongolia has a history of 31 years. But if you think about it, God has always been present in nomadic culture. If you think about Abraham, the ancestor of our religion, he was nomadic as well. The nomadic people believe in loving each other, in forgiving each other. That's in our faith too. That's why I believe God is in the nomadic culture.
I know here they say there is freedom of religion or freedom of expression, but in practice and in reality, is it completely free, or do you find there are sometimes restrictions from the government?
Since most of the religious Mongolian people are foreigners, there are problems with visas and with permits for the church. Every year we have to apply for a permit and we have to give a report to the authorities about our work, but we are trying to work through it step by step. There is also this perception that people connected with the Catholic Church are foreigners with money who are rich. This too can cause problems.
It's hoped that the visit of Pope Francis uplifts the small Catholic community and transforms the broader perception of the church here in Mongolia.
We are so happy to welcome the Pope in our country. It's beautiful.